This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Sounds Choral, a program that explores the many aspects of choral music in ways designed not only to inform, but also to provide new food for thought and perhaps even enliven our journey together along the way. I am Deborah Simpkin King, a choral conductor based in Manhattan and northern New Jersey. I am founder and conductor of the Ember Vocal Ensemble and of Project Encore, and serve as Artistic Director and Conductor of Crescent Concerts and Crescent Avenue Presbyterian Church. I also chair the New York Choral Consortium and co-coordinate the ACDA High School Choral Festival for the state of New Jersey, in addition to guest conducting engagements. In these varied roles, I have the joy of working with many singers and many conductors. All have their areas of greatest interest, and all have unique backgrounds. There is quite an incredible breadth of repertoire, programming, and presentation styles, in addition to a very broad spectrum of experience among singers and choirs. In short, when it comes to choral music, one size definitely does not fit all. My guess is that most of us spending this hour today already love choral music and are eager to share some new perspectives on it, and we'll get to that. But I'm wondering if we might also work together on something, because I find that there are some common myths about choral music that may keep people from listening even once, even people who may have season tickets to the opera or the symphony. What are some of these myths, and how might we address them so that, whether to a next edition of Sounds Choral or to a live concert, we could more successfully bring a friend?
Thank you.
Well, that was, of course, the popularly recognizable first movement of Karl Orff's Carmina Burana, sung by my group now known as Ember. It has been heard behind commercials for everything from beer to used cars. Clearly, marketing gurus recognize the powerful impact of Orff's music. Just as Karl Orff himself, a German composer born in the late 19th century and developer of a still very influential approach to music education for children, was struck when he first saw the famous picture of Lady Fortune with her wheel, and under it, these lines that would become the opening words of the music we just heard. O Fortuna, velut luna, statu variabilis. O Fortune, like the moon, you are changeable. The text goes on to describe the fickle nature of Lady Fortune, ever waxing and waning, first oppressing and then soothing, and this is a text from a 13th century manuscript. Surely, this is life experience to which we can all relate, and according to the composer, immediately upon discovering the text, he sketched out the music we just heard. The manuscript containing the text does not include musical notes with the kind of clarity we are used to today. The notation is what we now call non-diastematic notation, or notation that shows the shape of melodies, but not the precise pitches. Nonetheless, given that, along with an understanding of 13th century rhythmic modes, there is enough indication of musical intent that some educated guessing is at least possible. Well, a number of years ago, when I was performing Karl Orff's Carmina Burana with my group, now called Ember, I reached back into my musicology background and constructed some best guesses on some of the more, shall we say, lively texts from the manuscript that so caught the imagination of Karl Orff. And we had great fun entering the concert space with what we came up with. The soloist that you are hearing in this excerpt from what we did are mezzo Bernadette Oberndorf and tenor Salvatore Diana.
Thank you.
But back to our question of myths surrounding choral music. One such myth that I happen to have heard twice in just this past week is that most choirs just sing religious music. And that is, of course, quickly followed by, not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just not for me. So why do so many seem to have this idea? And is there any truth in it? Well, the real truth is that music written for voices usually has text, though not always, and musical settings of texts usually reflect something in the life experience of the composer who selected the text. Can this be a religious something? Of course. Is it always? Of course not. And we have just heard some very well-known evidence of that fact from the classical choral canon. There are so many trends in choral music today that were not noticeably part of the choral world even a quarter of a century ago, and programming around a theme is one of those. Some of my favorite parts of Karl Orff's Carmina Burana come from the third large section called Cour d'Amour, the Court of Love. We'll come back to that later, but for now, let's look at how some conductors are taking such a basic human emotion as love and building an entire concert program around it. A few years ago, I was asked to guest conduct the Manhattan Choral Ensemble in their December concert while their conductor, Tom Cunningham, was away on sabbatical. I happily agreed. The concert was to follow a pattern established by the group for their December programs of an alternation of readings and music and make use of a human emotion around which the music would be selected. The year's theme that I was given was love, and we had great fun. I couldn't resist including Eric Whitaker's piece, A Boy and a Girl. Its first portion is actually very reminiscent of some of the text in Cour d'Amour portion of Carmina. Listen to the luscious chords the composer uses to express first a love between children, and then in a second verse, it's blossoming into ripened love between adults. The eternal nature of their love is expressed in a third verse, by which time their love is continuing beyond their deaths. And the story continues even further in a fourth verse, which is just hummed by the chorus, leaving us to wonder about their ongoing life together in eternity. Here is a performance of Eric Whitaker's A Boy and a Girl, sung by the Eric Whitaker Singers.
Thank you.
Eric Whitaker's A Boy and a Girl. What a compelling expression of an emotion surely we have all experienced. On that same concert with the Manhattan Choral Ensemble, we included the world premiere of a tiny gem by Robert Schunemann from his Four Songs of Love, entitled Do I Not Deal with Angels? The text is a brief poem by American poet Kenneth Patchen, and I'll read it since the performance acoustic obscures a few of the words. Here it is. Do I not deal with angels when her lips I touch? So gentle, so warm, so sweet. Falsity has no sight of her. Oh, the world is a place of veils and roses when she is there. I come to her wonder like a boy finding a star in a haymow, and there is nothing cruel or mad or evil anywhere. That was the Manhattan Choral Ensemble's performance of Do I Not Deal with Angels by Robert Schunemann. Another very different choral piece on the subject of love is a setting of the famous opening of Shakespeare's play Twelfth Night. If music be the food of love, sing on. Listen to how Minnesota composer David Dickow sometimes uses the piano to give flight to emotion. At other times, uses the voices alone or a cappella for such delicate lines as, "All my senses feasted are." Here is a performance of Dickow's If Music Be the Food of Love, sung by my group Ember on a concert entitled I Am in Need of Music from 2015.
Thank you.
That was Ember's performance of David Dickow's If Music Be the Food of Love. But secular music is certainly not exclusively a modern-day phenomenon. Here is Cantus Thuringia out of Germany, having some fun with 16th and 17th century composer John Dowland's madrigal, Come Again, Sweet Love Doth Now Invite. Listen as Sylvia Mueller plays with some of the melodies, improvising on recorder. Predecessor of our modern-day flute. We have just heard John Dowland's madrigal, Come Again, Sweet Love Doth Now Invite, performed by Cantus Thuringia. I am Deborah Simkin King, your host on today's edition of Sounds Choral, where we are looking at choral myths. So much marvelous choral music is written on the subject of love. But back once again to our question of why the myth that equates choral music with religious music. As we have very clearly seen in just a very few examples, it is simply not a valid assumption. Choral music is truly every man's music, and we'll do a show down the road just a bit, expanding on that very theme. Yet, as with many erroneous notions, there are perhaps some reasons for the misperception. For one thing, because churches often have such marvelous acoustics, making the ease of singing in them somewhat akin to that of singing in the shower, even choirs that have no connection beyond that of a venue rental often turn up in churches to perform. And in all fairness, many churches, the most historic supporter of the arts back when there was no other form of support, churches are still generous with their space, making it affordable for performing ensembles, few of whom are deeply endowed with funds. Then there is the fact that most churches actually do have their own choirs in some form, thereby logically creating a connection in the minds of the general public between choirs and religious music. But as is certainly more than obvious, the notion of choral music being synonymous with religious music simply does not hold up. I'd like us to conclude our time together today listening to the final several movements of Carmina Burana with which we began our show. As many will recall, Carmina Burana is constructed in three multiple movement sections that are surrounded by a two movement opening and a two movement closing section. The first large section is all about the beauty of springtime. The second is a fairly rowdy scene in a tavern. The third, to which we have already referred, is all about love. As we start with the third movement in this section called Cour d'Amour, listen to how Orff uses the soprano voice to characterize the innocent young maiden, torn between purity and desire. In the following movement, the would-be lover, a baritone, expresses impatience that she has not shown up yet. His interest lacks no clarity. Following that, all of the men in the choir sing together about the joys of being alone with a young maiden in what might be referred to as a guy's bonding song. The young lady continues in her dilemma, and then ultimately all voices enter and the fun begins in earnest. In the final movement within the Cour d'Amour section, our young lady sings sweetly of giving herself to love. The penultimate movement of Carmina explosively exalts in the glory of love, and that is followed by a return to O Fortuna, O Fortune, with which we began today. Let's listen together now to the Arnold Schoenberg Choir and the Vienna Philharmonic under the direction of André Previn in a performance of the last several movements of Karl Orff's Carmina Burana. Soprano soloist is Barbara Bonney, and the baritone soloist is Anthony Michaels Moore. I hope you enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
It is my hope that in debunking this myth about choral music, and in looking forward to addressing others in future shows, you might find yourself with a bolder invitation to friends and family not yet familiar with choral music. I am Deborah Simkin King, your host today on Sounds Choral, and I welcome your input, your observations of other choral myths, your thoughts about today's program. My contact information is easily available through my website, and I invite you to take a look. DeborahSKing.com, DeborahSKing.com. Sounds Choral is produced at the studios of WWFM, the Classical Network, David Olsenberg, producer. You can listen to any recent Sounds Choral program by going to our website, WWFM.org, and clicking on Classical and Webcasts. You can also support programming like this with a donation in membership at our website. Thanks so much for listening. Sounds Choral is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org. It is my hope that out of today's show, you may find it easier next time to bring a friend.